All right, welcome out everybody. I'm Travis Wright, one of the program managers on the System Center engineering team. I got my best buddies here, Mark Umeno, Kaitan Gailani. Glad to have you guys out here to our session on best practices around Service Manager. How many of you attended the session that we just did prior to this one? I can't even see anything out there. I don't think it was very many hands.
Nope.
All right, so for those of you that just attended our last session, sorry, this is going to be a little bit of repeat for those people that are new to this session. So today, what we're going to do is we're going to talk about just kind of the general idea of how Service Manager works, some of the best practices around how you can use Service Manager to fill in a big part of delivering IT as a service with System Center. So you've probably seen this slide quite a few times here at the conference. The part that we're going to talk about today is Service Manager. We're going to show a little bit of using Orchestrator to automate some things. And we'll also be showing some with Operations Manager detecting some problems in the environment. So, All right, so there's kind of three key concepts that we want to emphasize around Service Manager. The first one is standardization. So when we talk about standardization, what we want here is for you as an IT organization to think about what services it is that you offer to your customers. So it could be things like a messaging service, could be things like a printing service, user account management, all the different services that you offer to your customers. The next thing you want to think about that's one level down from that is what are the types of requests that you want to make available for people to make requests about. So as an example, if you have the messaging service, you might want to allow people to request a mailbox or request an increase of the size of their mailbox. Maybe a different service might be like request a new SharePoint site, et cetera. And then once you define these different types of requests that you want to make available to your customers, you then need to identify what is the process involved in fulfilling those types of requests. And by the way, these requests could also be things like incidents, right? So if somebody has an issue with something, there might be a pre-established process for dealing with that type of incident, and we want to capture what that process is. Once we identify what that process is, we then want to codify that in Service Manager using templates and runbooks and things like that to make sure that we're doing this in a standardized way. And what I mean by that is that in the template, we identify what the process is, what are the different activities that need to happen in sequence, and what people need to be involved in terms of approving requests that are being made, troubleshooting issues, who's going to actually implement the request that the user is asking for, and so on. So we identify all that, and we capture it all in a template. And then every time somebody makes a request of that type, we create it from that template. And that way, the information is always consistent and it's standardized. When we talk about self-service, what we're talking about here is we want to make these requests available to people in a self-service method, right? So we want people to be able to go up to a self-service portal and request something, provide the information that the IT team requires in order to fulfill that request or to troubleshoot that incident or whatever it is the user is asking for help with. And we want to make that handoff as seamless as possible. Okay, so we want to prompt the user with the exact questions we need to ask them, and then we want to get that information back and store it in a way where the data is structured and we can then use it in automation. Okay, so if somebody calls up somebody on the phone or they send in an email or something like that, the data ends up being unstructured, things get lost in translation and so on. It's really just not the ideal method. We also want to make it easy for people that are involved in the process of fulfilling these requests to do things in a self-service way as well. So we want people that are approving requests to be able to do that through the self-service portal. We want people that are implementing the request to be able to mark those tasks that are assigned to them as being completed through the self-service portal. We want people to do self-service reporting where they can go up to the portal and see the reports and dashboards and things like that. And again, this is really all just about making it real easy for people to do this, okay? And then the next thing is automation. So when it comes to automation, we want to automate as many things as possible. So we want to automate the fulfillment of the request using Orchestrator. So we take the example of, like, let's say creating a mailbox. We want to automate that process of creating the mailbox because all we need is a little bit of information. We pass that to Orchestrator. Orchestrator goes and does it. We also want to automate other things around the process too. So for example, we want to automate the sending of notifications to people. We want to notify the approvers when there's something new that they need to approve. We want to notify somebody that has some work assigned to them so that they can go and do that work. We want to notify the requester that we've received their request, that we've completed their request, and so on. So we want to automate as much as possible around each of these requests that's happening. So what are the benefits that we get from doing these things? In terms of standardization, first of all, we become compliant with our policies. So what we want to do is we want to take those government and industry regulations that our organization is subject to and codify our compliance to those policies into our process. Just a very basic example would be if somebody wants to request a certain type of thing, maybe to be added to a particular security group, which is kind of a high security group, that needs to be approved by a vice president, for example. So in that case, we would create a service request template. We would have a review activity in there in which the vice president is the reviewer. And whenever somebody makes that type of request, the vice president is notified that he needs to approve that. He approves it. That approval is stored now in Service Manager, and that helps us be compliant with our policies. And every time somebody requests something like that, we follow that exact same process, and it's all documented. Because we're doing things in a standardized way, we have a repeatable process that we do over and over and over and over again in the exact same way, and that increases our reliability. Because we're not having a lot of variability in what we're doing, we know exactly how to do it, and we just do it over and over, and it becomes routine, and we have more reliability because of that. And lastly, we have simplicity of choice. So we want to make sure that we don't overwhelm our customers with too many options. You know, I'm sure all of you have gone and signed up for like a cell phone plan. You know, there's so many different variations and options and add-ons and all this kind of stuff. It becomes a little bit overwhelming. Well, we want to make that a little bit easier for people. We want to provide, you know, like an ABC package for them to request. So we want to standardize those requests and make it a little bit easier for people to use. What benefits do we get from self-service? We get increased customer satisfaction. Nobody wants to call up the service desk and sit there on the phone with them and have them ask us, who are we? What's your phone number? Where can I call you back at? All that type of stuff. People really just want to hit a self-service portal, provide the information they need, and just be done with it. We also want to provide information to the user so that they can get a really quick glance at what the status of their request is. They don't have to pick up the phone and say, are you done with my request? They just want to go to the portal, see the request, what's the current status of it, update some information about it, whatever it might be. We also want to reduce costs. It just doesn't make any sense for one person to call up another person and have the person that was called ask the other person questions about some form that they're filling out on their computer screen. It's just this back and forth is just a waste of people's time. We just want to have one person filling out the form. And we also want to make sure that we don't lose anything in translation, whether it's a language barrier issue or the quality of the phone connection or whatever it might be. We just want to make sure that whatever the user wants is whatever the user gets, and they provide it directly to the IT team, and there's nothing going through multiple people to get that entered into the system. The benefits we get from automation, we get faster time to delivery. So we got Bob. Bob's our guy that implements certain types of requests. We don't want to wait for Bob to get out of his meeting or get back from vacation or whatever. We want to automate those portions of Bob's job that we can, so that those happen as soon as possible, and we don't have to wait for Bob to be available to do those things. We want to reduce costs by eliminating the need for Bob to do certain things. We don't want Bob to be logging into some server and making some tweak or whatever. We just want to automate that so it just happens, and then Bob can get on to doing more important things. And we also want to minimize human error. Bob's a great guy, but sometimes he fat fingers things, and he makes mistakes, and it just happens, and it's nothing against Bob, but it's just human, right? And so we want to eliminate as much human error as possible through automation. So let's talk a little bit about the architecture that Service Manager provides to enable service delivery and automation. So first of all, we have standardized process automation that's enabled through the CMDB. The CMDB is the central store of Service Manager and really all of System Center because we bring data from all the other System Center components into the CMDB. We then relate those configuration items that we have, computers, databases, websites, et cetera, to work items, things like incidents, change requests, so that we know exactly which configuration items we're affecting when we're making changes or which configuration items are affected by incidents. As I mentioned earlier, we can use templates to codify our process, and then every time we go and create a work item, we always instantiate that from a template so that we have standard data that's entered and we have a standard process that we follow. Workflows help us standardize things. They help us automate things. We have forms that allow us to capture data in a structured way, and we have the reporting and data warehouse that allows us to ultimately report out on how we're doing. Underneath this, we've got integration. So we've got integration out to the rest of the System Center suite. So we've got connectors that go out to Virtual Machine Manager, Operations Manager, Orchestrator, and Virtual Machine Manager. And we also have a connector to Active Directory. So we can bring all this data into one place in the CMDB, and we can also affect change out into all of those places through Orchestrator. So we can automate things touching out into all those areas as well. On top of this platform, Microsoft provides a number of different solutions. Incident management, change management, release management, configuration management, compliance and risk management. And our partners also provide solutions on top of this platform. And then on top of that, we have our self-service interfaces. So we have a self-service portal, which customers can use to go and request things. They can view the status of them. They can search the knowledge base. Approvers can approve things. And there's also self-service interfaces through email, if you will. So somebody can approve something through an email response. They can do that in any email client, including mobile phones. So we try to make it really easy for people to interact with Service Manager using these different self-service interfaces. So today what we're going to do is we're going to kind of frame the rest of the conversation in the concept of these standard practices, where we're going to import the data into Service Manager, where they're going to build request offerings that are made available to our users, whether they're incidents or service requests. Those are then going to be published out to the service catalog so that they can request them through self-service. And once we've got that all out there, then we get into the cycle where we're operating, monitoring, and optimizing our process. So today the demo scenario is going to revolve around first importing a bunch of data into the CMDB, and then we're going to show you how we've configured the service catalog ahead of time, and then we're going to actually create service requests and incidents. We're going to show you kind of how we walk through the life cycle of dealing with those requests and incidents that happen, and we're going to monitor how things are going. And then we're going to actually take an existing process and we're going to optimize that by automating something that was previously done manually. So to do that, I'm going to first start out and talk about the CMDB. So the CMDB in Service Manager is populated by connectors that we provide out of the box. First, we have a connector to Virtual Machine Manager. This is new now in Service Manager 2012. The Virtual Machine Manager connector brings over library content. So this is things like virtual machine templates, service templates, storage classifications, load balancers, and things like that that you would typically find in the library section of the Virtual Machine Manager console. We also have a connector from Operations Manager. Now, Operations Manager and Service Manager share a common technology foundation. So that means that they have the exact same data model, the exact same database schema underlying both of those components of the suite. And if you create a management pack for Operations Manager to discover and monitor anything, like an Exchange server, SQL server, a F5 device, it doesn't really matter, that same management pack can be imported into Service Manager, and then the discovered objects that Ops Manager finds based on those management packs will automatically flow into the Service Manager CMDB. So this would include things like servers, databases, websites, Exchange servers, as well as things like virtual machines and hosts. We also have a connector to Configuration Manager. The Config Manager connector brings in computers, the hardware on those computers, the software on those computers, and we also bring in a special relationship, which is the computer primary user. So this is something the Configuration Manager detects based upon the login history to a particular computer. And then we relate who the primary user of a computer is in the Service Manager CMDB. The Active Directory connector brings in users, computers, printers, and groups. And then the Orchestrator connector is a little bit different. The Orchestrator connector, the first thing we do there is we import runbooks that you've defined in Orchestrator into Service Manager as objects in the CMDB. And you can then take those runbooks and create what we call automated activity work items out of those and include those in your process. So things like a service request might have first a review activity to approve something, followed by a manual activity to go and check on something, and then it could have a runbook activity work item after that, which when it becomes active in that process will call out to the orchestrator web service and trigger that runbook to go and actually automatically fulfill that request. Now you can also use Orchestrator to insert data into the service manager CMDB using the service manager integration pack. So as an example, you might have a database which stores some devices that you have, let's say slot machines, and you can write a Orchestrator runbook that goes and queries that database of slot machines, gets back all the slot machine objects, and then uses the service manager integration pack to insert those slot machines into the service manager CMDB. And we also have some other options for getting data into the CMDB. You can use CSV data file imports. So you create a CSV data file, you create a mapping file that tells us where to put the data, and we'll insert that data either on a one-time basis on demand, or you can set it up to run on a schedule. You can also create custom connectors using the SDK to insert data in. And we also have PowerShell commandlets that you can use to insert or update information in the service manager database. So one thing that I just want to point out here is kind of how things work when you insert data into the service manager CMDB. We have, for example, a Windows computer class. The Windows computer class has a number of different properties defined on it, like the fully qualified domain name, the network adapter's IP address, whatever it might be. Now, in some cases, we get the same set of data from multiple sources. So, for example, a configuration manager instance might be managing a computer that's also being managed by Ops Manager, and it's also in Active Directory. So we're going to get information about that computer from all of those sources. And what happens is we map all of those objects onto one object using the primary key values of that class. So in the case of the Windows computer class, that's the fully qualified domain name or the actual property name as principal name. So as long as we find the computers in these different sources with the same principal name, we'll actually map that down to one object in the CMDB. And so long as those values are the same, then there's really no problem. Where the values conflict, our resolution policy is that the last writer wins. So ultimately, you end up with this consolidated view of IT where you get all this data from these multiple sources, and it shows up as one object in the service manager CMDB. In this case, this is an example of the Windows computer form showing the processor, network adapters, and so on that we've gotten from both configuration manager and operations manager. Okay, now let's also talk about the self-service service catalog. So the self-service portal, is this you? This is Caden, right? Oh, it's you. Okay, come on. We've all done this session so many times, we sort of lose track of who's talking about what. So.
Okay. All right. Thanks, Travis. All right. So let's talk about the portal and Service Manager. There are kind of four areas. So first of all, the Service Manager portal for 2012 is different than the one we had before for 2010. It's Silverlight web parts that are hosted in SharePoint. All right. And then they have these features. It has a service catalog, as Travis, I think, mentioned before. It has knowledge articles or help articles for users. So you can, as an IT department, allow users to look up information for themselves. It has a place for looking up the status of your requests, and then a place for approving activities or fulfilling manual tasks. A little bit of the technical details. There's kind of a couple parts to the portal. In the there's the web content server where the service that connects the portal to the database and service manager is hosted. It's running in IIS with IIS app pools. And then it has a service host, which is this improc client and server, which allows that component to communicate via WCF to the service manager database. Okay? And then there's this content host, which is where the ZAP files that are from Silverlight are packaged. Okay. And then there's the web config files that handle the navigation between these web parts. Okay, so that's how the web content server works. And then you can separately have a SharePoint site which hosts the content, these Silverlight parts, right? So you can use the free version of SharePoint 2010, SharePoint Foundation, or the enterprise version, which has additional features. It can be in a SharePoint farm, an existing SharePoint farm, and you can install into those. These web parts that are made in Silverlight are actually wrapped in ASPX, so that you can use SharePoint customizations to be able to customize those web parts. Right? So you don't have to do any Silverlight coding. You just use the UI to customize. And then it's also possible to add in other SharePoints via standard SharePoint extensibility. Right? In the setup, you can have the portal parts located with the SM management server, or a lot of times you would make them remote. So with that, we'll start our demo. It'll take me a second. I think I have to log back in. All right, so in this scenario, I am a new application administrator that has just joined Contoso and I have the job of administering the DinnerNow application. So I'm going to try to access the DinnerNow application.
It's jitting.
Okay, I'll take a second. And it looks like I don't have access to it, so I don't have permissions to the site. But look, there's a handy link down here, so let me click on that. And that's going to take me to a request offering from the Service Manager Service Catalog. And I just need to enter a justification. Okay, and then I'm going to click Submit, and that's going to create a service request in the Service Manager CMDB, and I can check on the status of that. That's SR12 something. Over here, yeah, SR... SR12958. Okay, so now I've created a request, and now I'm waiting for somebody to approve my request and give me access.
So I think we should give Mark access. I think we need him, right, to work on the stuff. Otherwise, we'll not get this demo working. Let's see.
Wait, just
as long as we get this working.
Is your thing plugged in?
Oh, got it. Came out again. Right here. Okay.
There you go. Okay.
Nope. Ooh. That's coming.
Sorry. How about now?
Okay, so he created a service request.
Oh man, it keeps getting disconnected. Okay, there you go.
Okay. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to refresh my screen here, and I can see that here he created the service request, actually it assigned to me directly, and it all happened through the template that was there in service request. And what I'm going to do here is I'm going to just pull up the service request and show you some of the fields that have been pre-filled by the template, and also what input that Mark had provided is here. So you can see his time is money, so you can get his time. So he'll get money. And then you can see it's assigned to me automatically. The categorized automatically came to security access control. The urgency and priority were set automatically. And the source was portal. So all this was driven dynamically through the template. And then you have a couple activities in here. One is the review activity, which is approval, and the other one is the access activity in here. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to go out of here. I'm just going to show you from the portal to approve the request. So if I go to my activities here, just hit refresh this one, I should see the service request or activity that's there in progress. And once I approve it, Okay. Approved for dinner now. Then this activity will get completed, and then the automated activity will actually create and add Mark to the dinner now admin group so that he can get access to the service to the dinner now application. So that should happen shortly. Let's see here. Also,
can I check now?
Yeah, one more thing I wanted to show you was as basically the activity will go completed, and then let's see if Mark gets added, and then you can show. Okay, let's go back up here. Right here. Here's the Dinner Now admin group. Let's see if Mark's already there or not. Mark gets added here. Now he should have access to the site.
Okay, can I check now?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. All right, so check the site first. We've got access.
The suspense.
It's kind of a slow website. I got to get working on this site. Like, not working that great. Okay, look, I got access now. Okay. So I'm going in and let me click around here. Cart. Oh. That's not working that great. Let's see information here. Looks okay. All right.
Oh, you got kicked out.
What I'll do is while Mark is working through his site, I'm going to actually simulate an error and stop the website so that and then basically interrupt his. Let's see, I'm going to simulate an error here.
Okay, should I click on something now?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, so now for some reason the website's down, and so I can go back to the Service Manager portal and now file a ticket on this, right? So I'm going to go back and under Dinner Now, I can request not only a service request, but I can also do an incident. So I can say website is down, 503 error. This is a enterprise application problem, high urgency, of course. And let me give myself more space. Not working. And then I'll click next. And I'll submit now an incident. So now it says IR 12962. So it's an incident, not a service request. But again, I can also check on the status under my requests. Now I'm going to wait for the IT department to fix it.
And that'll be me to fix it.
Okay.
Okay. So let's continue here a little bit. So what we saw right now was basically he created the self-service request, and also you saw he requested the access, and then he actually also filed an incident. Now we basically go into the operation mode where we are trying to troubleshoot the incidents, meeting the SLAs, and we want to continue those things as far as, you know, make sure that we're efficiently operating our service desk and other processes within that, right? And we'll go into the service level agreements, basically in terms of and I'll demo that as we go forward in here on how we actually have introduced service level agreements in our Service Manager 2012. And this is a new capability with, you know, most of the requests coming from you guys. Are you guys excited about the service level agreements capability that's coming out in 2012? How many of you guys know about it? Okay, about a third. That's pretty good. And I think you'll see how it's working as we go forward, too. So if you look at from an agreements perspective, there are a couple important things out there. Calendars, right? We want to have business hours. And you can have holidays. You can have multiple calendars based on your maybe different service desk that you may have. You can have service level metrics that are defined in the box. We define some of the metrics for incident service request, and you can define your own time-based metrics. And the other thing you can see from a service level objectives perspective is supported for all work items. The service level objectives are tied to predefined queues. What we thought was most enterprises actually have some sort of queues defined for their incidents. And mostly the metrics are tied to these queues, or the service level objectives are tied to these queues. So what we have done is basically we're able to define service level objectives based on the queues that you have already predefined, specify the target and the warning thresholds, and then you can do notifications. Notifications are in the console itself in terms of it'll show you when you're particularly breaching an SLA or about to breach an SLA, it'll show you a warning, or in the form. Or you can actually send email notifications out too, where either it's about to breach an SLA, you can send a reminder notification, or you can send when the SLA is breached also. So you can do multiple things when the SLAs are about to breach or to breach. When you tie these things together, basically that's what we call as a service level agreement. So in this case, you have your calendar or business hours, then you tie the service level metric together, and then you tie the resolution time, basically the metrics together, and that defines basically the service level objective, and this package overall in a way is a service level agreement. So let's now look at it in terms of what we can see in our demo here. Okay, I'm going to go here. I want to make sure I can meet Mark's SLO that we have defined. Okay. Okay, I'll go to the all open incidents. You can see that I have the website is down error, and actually I have another incident also. You can see the management server pools are unavailable. That's a different incident. Let's look at this one that is a website down error. If I open up that incident, you will see in this case all the stuff that is filled in with the templates. You can see that it's been assigned to me. You can see that's the medium on high as the impact and urgency. And you can also, let's see, the service level objectives that are tied to there. So you can see the service level objectives that are tied here in terms of you have a response time for dinner now. There are two service level objectives that are tied, and I will go into detail of what those two are in and how I've defined them actually. And you can see the target end date for those service level objectives. Right? One is actually a response time, and one is actually a resolution time. And the difference between two, I will actually explain to you when I go through the metrics in there. So in this case, what I'm going to do is I'm going to make sure, first of all, I want to respond to Mark and make sure I meet my SLA for the response time. Hey, Mark, I'm working on your SLA. I'll set the first response time. I'm working on your incident. So, and basically, either the communication that happens either through the phone or through email, and you can communicate to the user. This is one of a very common SLA metric that people track, that did you respond to the user within like 15 minutes or so or not? So that's very common that people track. In this case, I'm going to say apply, and then what will happen is the workflow will kick in and say, oh, I actually met this SLA as far as the SLA is concerned. So that's one aspect of it. And then the other thing is that I'm going to go into the SLA and show how the SLA is defined. I have some time before I meet my SLA, so I can get, you know, Mark, wait a little bit before I can troubleshoot the incident. So let's go into the service level objective. So here I have the calendars defined, and you can see that I have 24 hours calendar defined. I have a business hour calendar defined. I can add holidays if I needed in the calendar here. I don't have any holidays added here, but I can add holidays in here. And then I have the metrics defined. You can see I have like four metrics defined. The first response time is for the service request, and then you have a response time for the incident request. And then you have resolution time for the incident. And when you define your service level objective, you actually use this metrics to define your target and the warning thresholds. So let's just take one example of the response time for dinner now incidents. So if you look at this SLA that I've defined, you can see the title of the SLA, and then I've selected the queue. It says all dinner now incidents in here, right? And then I define my service level criteria or service level objective. In this case, what calendar I'm using, what metric I'm using, in this case is response time, the target is 15 minutes, and the warning is 10 minutes. So warning threshold is 10 minutes. Okay? So I was able to meet that SLA, or I've not met the SLA, but I will meet that SLA before the response time actually expires. So, okay? And then the resolution time is for 2 hours, I think I'd set for, or actually for 4 hours I'd set. So let's now actually make sure, one more thing I want to do is that this website seems to give me a problem again and again. What I'm going to do here is I have a simple script which says restart the website, so I'm going to run that here. The website will come up and running. But at the same time, what I want to do is that I've seen this problem before. I think we'll take the questions at the end. So I've seen these problems before, and what I want to do is I want to create a problem so that somebody else in the tier 3 can actually take care on how they can auto-remediate this problem. And as you know, that Travis has been really expert on our service manager automation and auto-remediation. I want to make you assign that problem ticket to Travis so that he can figure out so that this doesn't problem happen again, and then Mark doesn't have to wait even 15 minutes before the website comes back up, okay? So let's do one thing here. I think the website should be coming up, and then what let's do here, go back up here. I'm going to the work item here. And I'll go to the all open incidents right here. And I'm going to resolve the incident, but I'm going to create a problem record here, right, first for this one. I'm going to create a problem record. So what basically that what I'm going to, right now it gets the default from the incident itself. If I had selected multiple, it wouldn't have got the title, but if we were the other defaults that were necessary, like the affected services or affected items, it would have all actually came into the problem record. So in this case, I would say seems to be a recurring issue with the Dinner Now website. It just needs a simple restart. So I can put that in there as, you know, my note, and then I can assign this to administrator, in this case is Travis. Oops. There you go. I assign it to Travis and assign some category. In this case, it's an application that's giving a problem, medium here. And also you'll see that in the related items, it'll actually relate the incident together, right? So I'm going to assign that here. Okay. And I think the Dinner Now website should be up. And I will actually make sure the Dinner Now website is up. And then I will resolve the incident Once the DinnerNow website is up, I would resolve the incident in here. I'm pretty confident my script works. What I'm going to do, you'll see here, right here, I'm going to say, resolve the incident in this case. Restarted the website. And this is, again, the best practice. From a best practice standpoint, you always want to make sure that if there are things that are there, you are able to create related issues or related things in there directly in context at that time. That saves time. And that also provides you all the capabilities, all the context information you can actually pass on to the analyst. So the next time, you can actually avoid some of this problem. Okay? So that should resolve the incident. And you can see the DinnerNow website is also up, so I've resolved my incident successfully. And the incident should go away from the all open incidents view. And that would go away from the all open incidents view. You can see that that's gone. So that fixes Mark's problem. And now we will see how does Travis actually solve this problem so that I don't have to do this over and over again. Travis?
All right. Thanks. Good work, Caden. All right, so let's talk a little bit more about how we can deal with this better. So this leads us into change and release management. I want to talk about this a little bit first before we go into the next part of the demo. So change management is really all about managing the changes that happen in your environment. We don't want to just randomly be making changes to the environment because oftentimes that's the source of our problems, right? So we want to make sure that these changes that we make are carefully considered, they're tested ahead of time, we evaluate the risk and impact of making those changes, and so that's all change management. Release management is more about coordinating the deployment of those changes into the environment. So as we might stack up a whole bunch of changes, and we don't necessarily want to make all of those changes just whenever, right? We want to coordinate it so that we make those changes potentially in a particular sequence if they're dependent upon each other, or we want to make them during a maintenance window. So maybe we have a maintenance window every week. We want to do it during that maintenance window, maybe with even every quarter. So release management is sort of project management for IT in terms of coordinating these changes that they happen to the environment. So this is just kind of a visual diagram of what might happen. We might create a number of different change requests, and then we map each of those change requests to different release windows. In this case, we have a monthly change release cycle, and we map each change request that gets created to a particular release. So we've added some new features in Service Manager 2012 to support change and release management. First of all, we've added some new kind of workflow features that allow us to skip failed activities. So if an activity fails for whatever reason and we just simply don't care that it failed, or maybe it failed but we went and resolved it out of band manually, that's fine. We can skip that. And we can also skip any unnecessary activities. So if we define a series of activities that's a part of our process, but in some cases we want to be able to skip an activity, we can mark an activity as skipped. We've introduced two new activity work item classes that are what we call container activities. And this is parallel and sequential. So a parallel activity allows us to create a container activity that contains other activities, each of which is going to happen in parallel. So they can all happen at the same time. This could be a combination of review activities, manual activities, runbook activities, or other types of automation activities. The sequential activity is also a container activity, but it defines that certain activities have to happen in sequence. So by combining these two types of container activities, you can achieve any sort of logical workflow that you want in your process. To support release management, we've introduced a couple new configuration item classes. The first one is the environment class. And an environment identifies those configuration items which represent an environment, like a pre-production environment, a test environment. Maybe you have multiple test environments, and you want to just keep track of what those are. And then a build class. And the build class helps you keep track of builds of line of business applications that you have. What's the build number? Where's the location of the bits, et cetera? And then as you go and you define a new release, you can say, okay, we're going to have an activity here to deploy this build to that environment. And we go and we test that out, and maybe it works, maybe it doesn't. We generate a new build, and then we're going to have an activity to deploy this new build to that same environment. If that works, then we deploy that same build to the next environment. And so it allows us to keep track of this by pointing to specific environments or builds. We've introduced two new user roles to Service Manager, and that's release management and activity designer. So these are roles that allow people that have that job function to come in and do just what they need to be able to do inside of Service Manager and no more. And we've also added new relationship types. So these are parent-child. So we have parent-child and incident management, such that you can have a parent incident and child incidents. And then when the parent incident gets resolved, all the child incidents are resolved. Similar to that, we have parent-child for releases and parent-child for changes. And we also have a relationship type that maps a change to a release, and that is called a dependent work item. And I'll show you what that looks like here in the UI in a minute. Okay, so let's go ahead and do the demo of change and release management. So the scenario here is that Kaitan has now assigned a problem record to me to go and automate the remediation of this type of problem so that we can automatically fix these things and Kaitan doesn't have to manually do it all the time and Mark doesn't have to wait for him. Okay, so what I've done ahead of time is I've created a runbook which will go and do what Kaitan was doing manually. Basically, it goes and it gets fired off from Service Manager. It goes and gets the activity work item that kicked it off. It goes and gets the parent incidents related to it. And then it goes and tests the Dinner Now application. If the test of the Dinner Now application doesn't work, then it goes and resets IIS, tests it again. If it works, then we resolve the manual activity, or sorry, the runbook activity, and then we close the incident. If it doesn't, then we restart the app pool, and then we test again. If it works, then we resolve the manual activity and close the incident. Or we, if it fails, then at that point, there's really nothing more we could do, so we could update the incident to let the Dinner Now administrator know that there's an issue and they need to deal with that. Okay, so now what I want to do is I want to take this runbook, and I want to include that in a incident template such that when this type of issue is detected by Operations Manager, that this incident template will be applied, and it will include this runbook activity work item in that template so that as soon as that happens, this runbook activity will change its status to in progress, and that'll tell Service Manager to call the orchestrator web service to kick off my runbook. So to kind of get a feel for what this looks like, we'll just go over here to the library workspace. We'll take a look at the runbooks view. And we can see that that Dinner Now runbook has been synced into Service Manager via the orchestrator connector. And I've clicked on this Create Runbook Automation Activity here before, and I've created a template. So if we go here to the templates view, we should be able to find our Dinner Now template. So here's our Dinner Now auto remediation runbook activity template. All right, so if I pop this open, we can see that this is just a standard runbook activity work item template. It's checked for is ready for automation, and it passes the incident GUID and the activity GUID over to the runbook. All right, so now what I want to do is I want to include this runbook activity work item template in an incident template. So if I take a look at this incident template that I've defined here, we'll see that this incident template contains the runbook activity work item template. So here on the activities tab, we've got that defined. So what's going to happen is that alert is going to come in from Operations Manager, and we're going to apply this template on top of it, and that's going to add a runbook activity work item to that incident, and that's going to immediately kick off the orchestrator runbook. So what I'll do now is close out of that, and I'll show you kind of the configuration that we have over here in the OM alert connector. So if we pop this open, we can see that right now we're using the standard Dinner Now incident template to apply to those alerts that are coming in from Operations Manager. And we want to change this to this auto remediation dinner now incident template, which is the one that I just showed you. So the current template doesn't have that automation remediation or automatic remediation runbook activity work item in it. This other auto remediation dinner now incident template does. So we want to change this to that. Okay, but we can't just randomly start going changing things. We need to go through our change and release process. So what I'm going to do now is I'm going to go to that problem record that Katen created for me. I'm going to start here with this, and I'm going to click on Create Change Requests. And we have a change request template already created for automate remediation. So I'm going to click this, and it'll pop up a change request form, which is already partially filled out for me, so that we're doing things in a standardized way. Every type of automated remediation change request, we're going to fill out this form, and that way we're doing it in a standardized way. So all this information is already filled out for me here. I might add some information here so that people know exactly what we're doing here. Dinner now, auto remediation. And then over here on the Activities tab, we can see that we've defined a number of different activities. First, we've got a review activity to approve what we're doing here. Then we've got a manual activity defined to develop the change, and a manual activity defined to test the change. And then we've got what we call a dependent activity here to deploy the change. So I'll just open up this one because this is kind of the one that people probably aren't that familiar with. But, you know, it looks very similar to other types of activity work items. But this dependent activity work item is special because you can include this dependent activity in a release. So let me show you how that works. So first I'll just go ahead and submit this change request. And this would kick off now the process of doing that change. Okay, so if we look here now, we've got the problem. If we open this up, the problem is now related to the change request and the incident. Okay, so this is really great because we can just traverse from one to the other to see what we did to deal with this over time. And so now I'm popping up the change request. It starts out its life in the new status. And this will go to in progress. That'll make the first activity defined in the process as active. So at this point, we're now going through the change process. Maybe my manager is going to approve what I'm trying to do here, and then I'll mark it done that I'm done developing it, and then I might have Bob test it for me, and he would mark that he's done with that. And at that point, we're ready to deploy it into production, and that's where this dependent activity comes in. So at this point, what I'm going to do is go over to release management. And our release manager has already created ahead of time for us a release record for this week's weekly maintenance window. So this is already defined here. And if I go over here and look at our activities tab for the release, we can see that there's a review activity where the release manager is going to review everything that's proposed and ultimately kick it off. And we've got this parallel activity here that's the container for implementing all of the changes. So in this case, we've already got one manual activity here. And then we're going to add in another manual activity here. So I'm just going to open up this parallel activity form here, go to the Activities tab. You can see we've already got one there, and we're going to add another one now. So in this case, though, we're going to add a manual activity. This is going to be to implement the Dinner Now auto remediation change. Okay, and normally we'd fill this out, assign it to me to implement the change or whoever. Okay, and we'll submit this. So now we have this manual activity here, and I'm just going to click OK here. Now I'm going to do something a little tricky here. This is new in 2012. I'm going to right-click on this activity and link it to a change request activity. And it pulls up all those change requests which have dependent activities defined in them. So I select the dependent activity inside of the change request, and then now this is linked. You can see that there's this little link icon right here. Okay, and that tells us that this manual activity is linked to that DA12975 dependent activity. So once I've done that, now what happens is we're going to go through the process of this release. Okay, so once we're done editing this release, we click on Run here, and that's going to change the status of this release record from editing to in progress. You know, so you can say, let's do it or whatever. And then Just like change management, this is going to start going through the process. So this is now in progress. If we refresh this, it'll change this review activity to be in progress here in a minute. And then once that's approved, then it'll make the parallel activity go to be in progress. And once the parallel activity goes into in progress, any child activity inside of it will also go to in progress. And then once whoever is assigned this manual activity here is done working on that, they're going to mark it completed, and that will trigger a workflow in Service Manager that will mark the dependent activity over in the change request as being completed. And since that is the last activity defined in the change request, that would mark that change request completed. All right, so at this point, I'm going to kind of skip over this in the interest of time, and I'm going to go ahead and implement my change. So I'm going to go back to the administration area here, and I'm going to open up the Ops Manager Alert Connector and change the configuration here to our new auto remediation template. Okay, so that's now our new policy. That's how we're going to deal with these kind of things. So with that, I'm going to bring Caton back up here, and he's going to break the app again. And we'll see how this works with our new process.
I have great job security. I can break the app. I can restart the app. Right, let's see.
You can put that on your resume. I break apps. I guess you could be a tester. That's what they do, right? All right, so while Caton is doing that, and we're kind of triggering all these things, we'll take a few questions while we're kind of waiting for this whole process to run. So if you have a question, go ahead and shout it out. Okay. Great question. Okay, so you want to take the question? I know it's your favorite.
Yes, currently sure we've heard that. First. That's a feature request.
Make sure you repeat the request.
The question is basically, how do we account for the service request if it's on hold, or incident if it's on hold, or pending, or waiting for customer input? You know, what is the how do we actually change the SLO to account for that? Currently, we cannot account for it. Basically, right now, it accounts from created date to the resolved date, so it doesn't really account for that in terms of the actual hold time or whatever. So right now, the time keeps on ticking, but that's a feature request that we've heard from a couple, at least two or three people, definitely.
Okay. Another question? Yep. You mean sending the help article to the user?
Yeah, when I open up an incident, I have the ability to search for a knowledge article and append a knowledge article to an incident.
Yep.
How would I get that information, that knowledge article, to the user, and thereby resolving the incident?
So, okay, the question is, if I search the knowledge base here inside of Service Manager. So I click on this, I go to search for knowledge articles, and I do some search, and I find some knowledge article which will resolve the incident for the user. But you want to send it to the user and have them do it themselves, right?
I can link a knowledge article to an incident, but I want to notify the user about.
Yeah, understood. So what you can do is, in order for the user to be able to view the knowledge article, you need to provide them the way to get to it on the self-service portal. That's one way. You could send them to the self-service portal and say, search for this knowledge article title, and that'll find it. And the way that you send them that information is you just open up the incident and you add that to the action log. And you would set up a notification subscription that notified the user when you did that kind of thing.
Yeah, but I already
Right.
Actually, a general question, because sometimes we relate files to the user and we want to notify the user and allow the user to open the related items.
Right. So right now, that's not exposed in the self-service portal. So I'm giving you other options, right? So the other options is you tell the user what to search for on the self-service portal. You can email the file to them directly. So if you click on this here, you can send mail. That'll launch the default mail client, and you can drop the RTF file in there and send it to them. So these are different options that you have for how to do it. It's a good request to, you know, if we were to expose that on the self-service portal, a list of the knowledge articles that are related to the incident, the user could open them from there. That's not in there right now. Okay. All right, so other questions? Go ahead.
Is there a connector to Forefront Identity Manager?
You want to take this while I look at Ops Manager?
No, we don't have an out-of-the-box connector to the Forefront Identity Manager. But there was actually, you want to talk about the white paper we had done earlier? Yeah. So there was actually an investigation that we had done earlier. It's possible to do one. We just didn't productize it, and we did explore that it is possible to do one.
Okay. Okay, other questions?
Yes.
So the question is, did you understand correctly that we create two activities and then link them, one activity in the change request and one in the release? That was the question? Yeah. Yeah. Well, think about the inside of the change request process. It's not a manual activity in there. It's a dependent activity. So that's sort of the placeholder for where you're going to implement it in the release lifecycle. And the actual implementation of it is either a manual activity or a runbook activity inside of the release. And so then when that's done, then we mark the dependent activity and the change as being done. Does that make sense? Yes? It makes sense? Okay, I get a yes and I get a no. So the thing is that you have to have some sort of placeholder inside of the change that indicates at which point you're actually going to implement that change. Because there could be other activities even after that dependent activity, which are part of the process, like a post-implementation review or something like that. So you have to have some kind of placeholder there in the change and be able to point to that from the release where you're actually implementing the change.
I can answer one more. So there's one more aspect on how they implement actually is that sometimes the change that, even though it's going in the release window, but there's a team that actually is implementing the change, they want to, because they have more specific knowledge on how to do the change. And that's why once the release is approved, right, and then that dependent activity or this release is completed, then the change folks can continue on the next activity. That's the other way to look at it. Other questions?
The Ops Manager alert's not firing.
No.
The website's down, but I don't know. Okay, let's take one more question.
Yes, actually, you can think about a couple of ways. One is actually if the user is associated with a primary computer, we have that information from Asset Intelligence and Config Manager within our database. So in actually the incident form, if the user has actually a primary computer or any couple of primary devices, the analyst would be able to see those devices there and quickly add that if that was a problem in there, and they would be able to look up that computer easily. Sorry, the question, again, just to repeat the question was around, is there a way for an analyst to actually figure out what computer that the user has, and can they actually, or the user can add that computer or not? And the response, as I said, was the analyst has a quick way of looking up what computer or what devices are the primary devices for that user and quickly add that to the incident within the incident form itself. Other questions? Yeah.
I can keep going if nobody else wants to. Is there any way to communicate with the VFC service so I can create my own website that doesn't run on Silverlight because Silverlight has some issues?
So your question is, could you create your own website to do this kind of thing?
Yeah.
And so in your own website, you would create your own specific forms. It wouldn't be configuration driven from the service catalog configuration and service manager. You'd have like hard-coded forms?
I would have hard-coded forms, but still I wanted to communicate with the web server so that the user inputs from the form would get inputted to the service offering.
Okay. So question is, you know, how would I create my own custom self-service portal and I'd have a hard-coded form, and I would want to insert incidents or service requests using that approach. So the easiest way to do that is to put the Service Manager SDK on your web server, and then in the postback, you process the inputs and use the Service Manager SDK to go and create the object in the Service Manager database. All right, so.
Yes.
That's a very interesting approach. So you could create a runbook which takes some data on initialized data, and then use the create incident activity out of the Service Manager integration pack. And then if you had a client that was capable of submitting web service calls to the orchestrator web service, it could pass that data to the initialized data, and then the runbook could create it. So that's one approach to at least create it. But you still need to create an experience where the user can see the status and things like that. So that's a little bit trickier. And that's where you may want to have the SDK running on some web server. So, okay, I don't know why, but Ops Manager is not picking up on the alert here that management
pools are unavailable. That's why.
What does that mean?
I don't know.
I don't think that was there before and it was working. Mm-hmm. So anyway, I don't know why, but Ops Manager is not picking up the alert, so we're not going to be able to show the whole automated remediation thing, but I have to take our word for it that works if Ops Manager detects the problem. So, okay, let's go ahead and go back to the PowerPoint now. And let's just kind of wrap up here. So again, you know, Service Manager, it's all about standardization, enabling self-service, driving that automation through Orchestrator. And, you know, the goal is to realize these values by doing that. And hopefully we've given you kind of a quick overview of most of the areas of Service Manager in terms of the different processes that Service Manager supports out of the box: incident management, problem management, change management, release management, service request fulfillment. We touched on all of those today. And we saw how the CMDB helps to drive all of those processes as well. So, appreciate you guys coming out today. We'll be available up here for any additional questions that you have, and please fill out your evaluations. Thank you.